Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. My guest is Senator Jeff Merkley. He's represented Oregon in the U.S. Senate for the past 17 years. He's a member of the Environment and Public Works Committee, the Rules Committee, the Foreign Relations Committee, and the all-important Appropriations Committee and Budget Committee. Welcome back to the Exchange, Senator.
Mike, it's great to be with you.
Did I miss any committees?
I think you covered them except for the China Commission, which I have chaired or co-chaired over the last few years.
Okay, well, let's start with the elephant in the room, so to speak. Senate Republicans are pushing for funding cuts to public media and foreign aid, and you're the ranking member on the Budget Committee. Will they succeed?
Well, I'm very fearful they will, because they had enough votes yesterday to get onto the bill that would eliminate the funding for public broadcasting. And so unless there's a hidden vote to come, I mean, it was 50-50 and the vice president had to come and break the tie. But here's what I want people to remember is that in much of rural Oregon and rural America, public broadcasting is very significant part of the landscape, including entertainment, including certainly quality news, certainly in terms of emergency notifications. And that will do a lot of damage to our rural landscape if we lose this funding. You know, in some counties that may be, or in some stations, it may be 9% of their funding. In other stations, it goes up as high as 50% of their funding. So very, very significant impact if we lose this national support.
Do you know why there's this attack on public media?
Well, certainly what I hear from the Trump administration is they don't like the news that's delivered. And that's the thing that I value about public broadcasting, is they try to give not the kind of a partisan spin, but give the honest evaluation, have people from multiple perspectives present their case. And you get, I guess, much more quality news than you can get hardly anywhere else. But I think if you're part of Team Trump, you don't want quality news. You want someone to echo their talking points. And that has upset them.
Well, the funding cuts also hit foreign aid.
They sure do. And when people hear foreign aid, they say, well, okay, well, why is that important? Well, a couple reasons. One is that it is a huge part of America's leadership in the world is to say there are these major diseases. The three big ones are tuberculosis and AIDS and malaria that are absolutely devastating, and we'll help the nations of the world take that on. And in the process, we build relationships that serve us in multiple ways. This is when people talk about soft power, that's what they're talking about. And it's just 1/3 of 1% of our budget. So it's a small amount of money that has a much bigger return in terms of people's respect and admiration and cooperation with the United States on multiple issues, including our national security. So this will be doing huge damage to the world's health. It'll also do huge damage to our influence in the world. And it leaves a vacuum that China's ready to fill. So this is bad news all the way around.
So what's the rationale behind that?
Well, the rationale is it's an easy point to say, hey, we're spending number money overseas, we should be spending it at home. And by the way, a lot of that foreign aid money is spent at home. It buys the grain from American farmers, right? It's corn from American farmers, ships it overseas, normally on American ships. So most of the money is actually spent in our own economy. But people aren't maybe so aware of that, and they're thinking, oh, those dollars could be spent better at home. But I'll tell you, the comparison we should make is a dollar here versus a dollar at the Defense Department in terms of our security and influence. The dollar has a much higher reward when it's spent on foreign aid than it when it's spent at the Defense Department in terms of our security, our relationships, our influence.
When we talk about domestic issues, well, here in Oregon, that's wildfire season. Last year, Governor Tina Kotek called a special session of the state legislature to fund the overdue costs of fighting wildfires in Oregon. What's happening on the federal level?
Well, on the federal level, we've been able to sustain the funding. It's been a major goal that I've had, is not to have happen what used to happen, where we would shut down all the other programs of the Forest Service to pay for fighting fires each summer. So we've had a buffer, and in my role as the lead Democrat on the Interior Spending Committee has been to fight for that, and we've won that battle. However, now what we're seeing is a real challenge with layoffs of individuals who are part of the firefighting teams. They hold what are called red cards, meaning they can serve a whole series of support functions when we're fighting fires, and also just kind of organizational general disarray as the administration starts talking about trying to do mergers between BLM and the Forest Service or other strategies. And it's happening at the worst possible time because we're in the middle of the firefighting season. I'm telling the administration, you want to reorganize something? Bring us a plan, not during fire season. Let's bring in the experts. Let's hear about it. Let's wrestle with how we can make things work more efficiently. There's probably some better ways to do things. But during firefighting season, it's all hands, all deck, with one mission, and that's to put out these fires. We have right now some 66 fires burning in Oregon. We've got some 9 major fires. We got the Neal Creek fire down in Jackson. We got the Elk fire over in Klamath County. So we're all aware that these fires, with a little bit of wind and some dry days, can become enormously huge infernos, and that they can burn up residences and burn down towns like they did in 2020. So we need to be completely focused on cooperation of everyone working together as we take on the fire season risks.
My guest is Senator Jeff Merkley. Senator, can we rely on the federal government as a partner when there's emergency challenges facing us? We just saw what happened in Texas. And as you mentioned, we're going to be fighting a lot of fires this season here in Oregon. Is the federal government a reliable partner?
Well, I'll put it this way, and that is that they've done some reorganization efforts that have not been thoughtfully prepared and create greater risks of us doing a poor job. And when it comes to the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, Trump said he wanted to shut it down completely and shift everything to the states. What we're hearing after the horrific floods in Texas, and my heart goes out to all of the family members affected, to lose so many people were swept away. And I think everyone's heard about the young girl swept away from Camp Mystic as part of that. And you just go, oh my goodness, how horrific. When we face disasters like this, floods like this, tornadoes, fires like we had on those Labor Day fires, they're too big for a community to manage by themselves. We need professionals who help tackle these challenges across the nation. They deploy the experts, they provide the guidance, they provide temporary housing vouchers, that ultimately they sometimes provide housing itself. They know what they're doing and they help us out. So I think we will hear a lot less from the administration about eliminating FEMA. I think they kind of realized that that was a erroneous way to go. And I certainly hope that we're not going to see a whole bunch of layoffs in the Forest Service and BLM now that the courts have given the administration last week, they gave permission to do so. And that'd be extremely dangerous. So I'm going to be pressing back along with some of my Republican partners, senators from Montana, senators from Alaska, who really understand how important good staffing for national parks, for our Forest Service and BLM, how important that is.
Well, you introduced the Sawmill Act. Tell me what that is.
Well, this act is part of two different acts, really. One is the Sawmill Act, and that's about providing low-interest loans for timber mills to expand or sustain their operation. And so that goes to the sawmill side. And then I have another act that goes, and it's called Wildfire Resilient Communities Act, and it takes on expanding forest management, so that means more thinning, more prescribed fires to reduce the risk of fire. Funds for communities to defend against wildfire, because individual houses and public buildings can do a lot to make themselves less likely to burn. And then support for both our calamities and our stewardship contracts, which are the strategies that have worked well in bringing partners together across the spectrum in order to do forest management, to cut trees and get them to the sawmill in a fashion that makes our forests healthier but creates a steady supply of saw logs. You need the nearby mill if forest management is going to be able to be accomplished economically. And so these two things go together. And of course, the mills themselves are often a key part of the economy of our rural communities. And I know this very well coming from Myrtle Creek, a small sawmill town in southern Oregon. And when the mills shut down that my dad worked out, we moved to Roseburg. And I still have a lot of relatives on both my mother's side and my father's side down in that Days Creek, Riddle, Myrtle Creek area. And the timber community is still a key part of what makes those communities work.
It is indeed. And I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you if you plan to continue representing Oregon in the Senate. Are you running for re-election?
Mike, I am running for re-election. And I took a long time, Mary, my wife, and I took a long time pondering it. We want to recognize that sometimes the best thing for a republic is to have people come in with fresh energy and fresh ideas. But at other times, you have to stay in the fight and bring the expertise you've developed. And what we saw with Trump trying to drive our republic into a strongman state, cultivating a subservient Congress with his threats against members and his loyalty tests, and having the court, the Supreme Court, provide powers to the executive that don't exist in our Constitution, we are in an incredibly perilous time in preserving the basic architecture of our republic. And that architecture is critical for having government by and for the people instead of the powerful. So because of Trump's threat, Mary and I are all in on continuing to be in the fight and to fight for the best outcome for Oregon's families on healthcare, housing, education, and good paying jobs.
Well, we definitely need a representative in the fight. What can Congress do to check the powers of the executive branch?
Well, they can start by not giving the executive more powers. And right now, what we are seeing is we had bipartisan spending bill process in the Appropriations Committee. And that has, we've had 11 out of 12 bills come out of that committee last year, unanimous or nearly unanimous. But it's being undone by partisan repeal of programs, including now the AID programs, that's the foreign assistance programs, and the public broadcasting. Why? Not because Congress decided that we shouldn't do those. In fact, they supported them a year ago, but because the president said, I want these things gone, and it's a loyalty test. You have to be with me, or I will bring to bear my super PAC and my opposition. And that ability of a president to essentially drive a loyalty test is not what our Constitution envisioned. We're supposed to have Congress develop the vision, representing the people, and then the executive, the president, executes that vision. So we need to start by maintaining and defending the powers, the Constitution, the power of the purse, and the power to design the executive branch that are inherently our responsibility under the division of powers.
I can't agree more, but the executive branch is now taking away the Department of Education, which was established by Congress. And the power of the purse that Congress has is being exploited, and looks like Medicaid is on the chopping block.
You're correct. And here's the thing, is that the lower courts said, hey, you can't dismantle the Department of Education. It was established by law. It's funded by law. The Supreme Court has, in multiple cases, defended that the power of the purse cannot be given to the executive. That would be becoming an authoritarian state. And that's not what our Constitution is. And yet, last week, the Supreme Court said that dismantlement of agencies, including the Department of Agency, could continue while the court cases are being adjudicated. This is a massive mistake of the Supreme Court, undermining the fundamental separation of powers that they have always defended through 200 years, and now they're abandoning their responsibility to defend the checks and balances. So that is extremely scary. And last year, they did something that was really horrific as well, which was to say that any act done by a president cannot be a criminal act as long as it's a government act. In other words, the president is above the law. This is the exact opposite of what our founders wanted. They were so concerned about a president trying to become a king with the powers that go with a king, and therefore said, no, we're going to reserve those powers to the people's house, to Congress. And so for the Supreme Court to find this invisible ink that says, oh, we want a king after all, and the president's exempt from the law, you combine that with pardon power, and the whole executive branch starts acting like the law doesn't matter. We see that almost on a daily basis with them violating some law that applies to the executive branch. And that is going to take us a long time to restore the vision of our Constitution after the wounds being inflicted right now.
Well, I'm glad you're rerunning for the Senate, and I hope you win your seat. I'm pretty sure you will. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have. But I really want to squeeze in this last question. Now that Trump has won the battle over his so-called big, beautiful bill, what's next?
Well, the immediate fight is over this rescission, a fancy word for repealing funding that was already authorized. And the head of the Office of Management and Budget, Russell Vogt, who is the architect of Project 25, he's the architect of putting massive new powers in the executive branch, if you will, making the president a king. He is promising more to come. And I may well be a tie vote on this bill, but we need four Republicans to stand with us and defend defend the role of Congress, defend the separation of powers, and say hell no to the president dictating how money is spent. That's not the president's role, and it is extremely dangerous for our future.
Oh. Thank you so much for the work that you're doing, Senator.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Mike.
My guest was Senator Jeff Merkley. I'm Mike Green.